This is station PCJ.
This is the son of PCJ. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello, and welcome to the monthly edition of Media Network Plus for June 2012. Coming up today, Willis Conover, who is credited with helping the collapse of communism in Eastern Europe. Conover presented the Jazz Hour on the Voice of America from the 1950s until he passed away in 1996. Keith will join us with a feature on this beloved icon of the Voice of America. KNLS, based in Alaska, USA, is a Christian station with a difference. Paul Ladd will join us to tell us what makes them stand out from the rest of the U.S. religious stations. Now, there have been songs about love, divorce, heartbreak, almost everything under the sun. But what about ham or amateur radio? The Ham Band from Denmark and their CD, Seeking You, is just that, a collection of songs about ham radio. We have this and more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, put your feet up, open your ears, and relax. Uh-oh, some of you need to wash your feet. Oh dear, please put them down again. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Peter Horrocks, the director of BBC Global News, said with global competition only intensifying, the BBC World Service has also had to face significant cuts to its funding, undergoing disrupting and painful changes. In this context, the BBC announced that the global weekly audience has risen by 14 million to 239 million in 2012, up 6% from last year. This has been driven primarily by the performance of the BBC Arabic and BBC Persian services. With the situation in the Middle East and North Africa unfolding, audiences increasingly are turning to the BBC for independent news they could trust. On June 19th, the BBC World Service got a major shot in the arm with a personal endorsement to the station from Burmese Democratic leader Aung San Suu Kyi. She visited the BBC on her 67th birthday and had a personal tour of the BBC World Service. After the tour, she met the press and praised the job and importance of the station.
Everywhere I have been, the BBC has been with me. Throughout these years, you don't know what the BBC and other broadcasting stations, but particularly the BBC World Service, has meant to me, because it kept me in touch with the rest of the world, and it allowed me to keep up with developments in the outside world, although I was not able to contact anybody. It was a one-way service, and for that, I'm very grateful. I had nothing to give in return, but all the time, the BBC was giving me something every day. And this I shall never forget. And I hope that you will continue to do that for other people in other places.
Last weekend, Radio Canada International said farewell, and all its programs went off the air. RCI Spanish had an unhappy task of closing Radio Canada International's shortwave service. The Spanish staff was upbeat during the program. Near the end of the broadcast, there were announcements in English and French.
The friends of Radio Canada International, friends of Canada all over the world, this was the last program in shortwave by Radio Canada International.
After the broadcast announcements, strangely enough, in Arabic, promoting the website that replaces RCI broadcasts on shortwave, Radio Canada International signed off shortwave mid-sentence during the Arabic announcement.
هنا راديو كندا الدولي سمير بدوي يحييكم ويقدم إليكم آخر نشرة للأخبار عبر الأثير لكن يمكنكم متابعتنا على شبكة الإنترنت أستهل النشرة بالموجز الإعلام
The most powerful farewell was from Mark Montgomery, host of The Link.
Well, now we have come to a point in the show. We only have a few minutes left in this final program, and I kind of find myself in the incredible position of being one of the last voices to be broadcast on Canada's international radio. And over these past few years, it has been my extreme privilege to be able to work alongside some of the most dedicated and talented people I've ever known. But we're saying goodbye to teammates and colleagues, most of whom are reluctantly retiring or leaving the job they love to seek other employment, but every one of them with a strong sense of pride for a job extremely well done. I'm finding this very hard. For 67 years, RCI has been the country's voice to the world, broadcasting Canada's viewpoints and culture in several languages. Not without some rocky financial times, though. Over a decade ago, when our budget was about double what it is now, the accounting firm KPMG was hired to examine RCI, and they discovered to their surprise that, in comparison, it was probably the most efficient of international broadcasters. It currently costs Canadians about 34 cents a year for this international service. And I don't know about you, but personally, I have more loose change than that rattling around in the ashtray of my car. But the RCI budget has now been cut by about 80%, with similar reduction on staff, equipment, and operations. And, you know, I've always felt that RCI shows would be of interest to Canadians. And when the CBC did finally carry the link, your reaction was almost universally positive.
We will have more on this story in the weekly 30-minute edition of Media Network Plus. Iraqi authorities have suspended plans to close 44 media operations in the country, including the BBC and Voice of America. The reversal comes after an outcry by press freedom advocates. Ali Nasir, the deputy director of Communications and Media Commission that regulates news media, says the agency will give the news organizations an unspecified amount of time to obtain licenses and pay outstanding fees. If you want more on these and other stories, visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog at www.kimandrewelliott.com or go to www.pcjmedia.com and you'll find a link for them at the bottom of our homepage. I'm Keith Parent.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
Through the 1950s until 1996, one of the most recognizable voices on the Voice of America was Willis Conover. With his deep baritone voice and slow way of speaking and presenting the Jazz Hour and Standards USA, Conover was a huge hit with listeners around the world. But in Eastern Europe, he was a major star and achieved rock star status in that part of the world. On a promotional tour to Poland, thousands of people showed up at the airport in Warsaw to welcome him. This was a total shock to Conover as well as to the VOA. Every day for four decades, Conover presented the American Songbook, also the Legends of American Jazz. Keith now presents a look at the man whose daily jazz program is credited with educating a generation of jazz musicians in Eastern Europe, Willis Conover.
In one of the high schools I attended, up around Buffalo, New York, an upperclassman wrote a skit about that presumably took place in a radio station, and I was given the part of the radio announcer, and I read my little bit, and afterwards people said, "You sounded just like a real radio announcer," and I said, "Oh," because at the age of 14, you're not too sure where you've been, let alone where you're going, and this was an indication of where I might want to go professionally, or at least where I wanted to go after I left home. And then a couple of years later, I took part in a spelling contest for three states down on the eastern shore of Maryland and wound up in the finals, which were broadcast on a Wilmington, Delaware radio station. And I came out in the last three, and the announcer for the program came out of the control room and said, the engineer was saying, "Boy, listen to this fellow talk, and if you ever want a job in radio, come to us." It happened that I came back to him when I wanted a job in radio, and he didn't remember me, but at least he decided for me that that was what I was going to try to do. Working in radio, I found in putting records together to make programs that certain records sounded more interesting to me than others. They had more vitality, more excitement, more, I don't know what it was. And I played those more and more often. And after a while, a fellow in a nearby record store, a clerk who was also a musician, said, "Since you like these records so much, why don't you get this magazine and find out what it is you're playing?" And the magazine was Downbeat. And I found that what I was playing was called jazz. It just happened that way. Of course, Downbeat and other publications and other founts of information and guidance, whether they're published or spoken, can only indicate a direction for your understanding and your taste to go, and it's very useful at the beginning. After you learn what the consensus is on the music you like, if you're anybody at all, you begin to break away from what other people think and feel and develop your own feelings about it, still retaining what you have felt from what they told you should feel originally. I was not entirely in love with the requirements of commercial domestic broadcasting, and so I tried to balance my programming activities with what they wanted part of the time, but also at my insistence, some time to play what I wanted the way I wanted to. This still caused an argument with the station manager at least once a week. So when I heard that the Voice of America was deciding to do a jazz program, I called, or as a matter of fact, I asked a friend in the State Department, whom I knew only as a friend, but I recall that he was also in the State Department. I thought that a call from him might get in on a slightly higher level over there, and he called, and fortunately, he reached the one person in authority at the Voice of America who knew and liked jazz, and that was John Wiggum. And John invited me over, and we talked, and we both knew immediately that we both knew about the music. And from there, I won't say that the sailing was smooth, but it wasn't as difficult as it had been in commercial radio. A program is like a symphony. A composer will take notes and put them together. All I can do as a non-musician is to take records and put them in a sequence that builds a structure that reflects and stimulates my feelings. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I'm in a position to do it so that other people can share it with me. But there comes a time in such a program when only a certain performer doing a certain kind of performance is the right performer and performance to follow the record that preceded and to precede the record that follows. And at this point, I'm simply not going to go to the top 40 list. It's the only completely happy job I've ever had, Jerry.
Wonderful.
They have they've not only left me alone as they promised, assured me that they trusted my taste and experience and ability, but they've supported me by keeping other people from jumping on me or from interfering with what I did.
Surprise to Willis that his program, truthfully, had the impact that it did. He had no way of knowing, of course, the impact he would have on Eastern Europe, the Baltics, USSR, Cuba. And it hit him in 1959, and it's described in a Reader's Digest article about his trip to Poland. And used to be one of his favorite stories, but when he came to Poland they were out on the tarmac, he saw these crowds and he thought maybe there was some dignitary from the Communist Party on the plane or something that they were greeting. There were people holding up banners and he just didn't know. As he came out, there was a band that started playing, Dixieland. He said, "What is this?" It was for him. And when he went to go into Warsaw, they had kids on motorcycles and scooters that were escorting him into the city as if he was some potentate or some huge figure. He had no idea at that time. It hit him again when my report came from the Soviet Union, from the exhibit. And I think that he had had about 6 letters at the time from USSR, and they'd have to be smuggled out. There probably were thousands, and they never let them come through. So they had no idea. Here in D.C., had no idea of the impact that his programs had in the Soviet Union. We would have people come up and say, "I speak English because I listen to Willis Connor on the radio. He is hero." I said, "That's wonderful. You know, I didn't know who he was." They could have come up and said, "Do you know Joe Blow?" "No, is he from Tokyo?" "I don't know." But I did get into this mystical connection that he had with them. I can remember in Tbilisi walking up this street, you know, because it's mountainous and they have, you know, very hilly streets. And we were walking up this crooked street in Tbilisi, and it was a hot summer evening. And from every window, his program was playing. And it was like hearing it in stereo. And we're walking up this thing, and I think it was Ellington that was playing. And by the time, and all these people in all these houses were listening to Willis Conover's program. I think it was at 11 o'clock at night. It was late. But I'll never forget that sensation. And a group of jazz musicians in Moscow drove me outside of the city and picking me up in a car and then putting me in another car. And we ended up at the Meat and Milk Institute. What the heck was it? And there assembled was a jazz quartet. And they played a concert for me. And they said for me to go back and tell them how they love Willis Conover. This is what I found. And as I said, back here in D.C., which I found out later, after I met Willis Conover, and they were talking about taking his program off the air because they said, should we be entertaining people in the Soviet Union with this music called jazz? So, as I said, if you talk about research or guides for programming, you have to be there. You have to talk to people there. And in a communist society, they are more reluctant to tell you, except the ones that, as we found, during that time, they had what they called the golden youth, Zolotaya Molodyosh, that were all tuned into things that were Western. They had people, they had guys walking around like the Beat Generation. So it was an incredible time of my life, and of course it changed me forever, because I did study with Willis Conover. He was a teacher, and he taught me everything. I used to go and listen to his programs in the studio when Stan Getz used to come in, or Louis Armstrong used to come in, or Woody Herman, or any of the ones come in for an interview. He'd call me up on the phone. He'd say, "Come on, Stan Getz is here." And this was my education. So then after I came back, because of this incredible popularity of his show, we did play Willis Conover's show at the end of the Russian programming. It went on about 1 or 2 in the morning, in which we would translate some of the things he said. Mm-hmm. Later on, I was very fortunate to do a Conversations with Conover show with him, which went on for 10 years, which was a departure from his usual. I mean, he was meticulous. He listened to every single thing. He constructed the entire program. This kind of thing that you think, oh, well, it's just a jazz show. I pull out an album and I put it on the air. No, nothing like that. He was, and as far as timing was concerned, textures were concerned, how one melody went to the other, there was a total method in this madness of putting together the show. Our show was improvisational. I'd walk in the studio, he'd say, pack of records, I think maybe we can take this, this, and this. And then in the middle of the show, he would think about something else, and then we'd go off into something else. And it was like sitting across from an encyclopedia of jazz. And we got him, you know, on tape. I took the program back, and then I redid it, translated it into Russian, got a voice to simulate the same kind of conversation that we had in English to be in Russian. So Willis was always when I did research on his biography in the National Archives, he had done a series of television things for television. He had videos in which he interviewed Red Norvo or at the Baird Auditorium, and he was already branching out at that time, because he knew that there was something else. So he was always very conscious of that, and did not want to just stay in the one comfortable place where he was. That's why he would go to cover concerts. The Newport Jazz Festival concerts were amazing. He went out to the universities and to Towson and to North Texas State, which has most of his papers right now because he had a special love for them, and University of Illinois, John Garvey, and would do different things, not just the records. He would do interviews, his memorable interview with Irving Berlin, with Bill Evans. So there was always a thing of not being staying in one place and branching out. When he did the Russian language show with me, he branched out to the Polish service, and a Polish lady did one with him, to the Romanian service, where Gabriela did one with him. So it was always in the thing of always searching for a new way of presentation.
There's a name that I'm going to mention who you may not know him. He went on the air by the name of Karl Yegorov. He was a broadcaster with Radio Moscow, and he did a show called Jazz Show. After the collapse of the Soviet Union and Radio Moscow became Voice of Russia, he started using his real name on the air, which was Carl Watts. And he continued doing Jazz Show. And I found out a couple of months ago that he was a listener of Willis's show when he was doing Jazz Show on Radio Moscow. And somebody that worked with Carl said, you know, he would record Jazz Show on a Wednesday. And where he was living in Moscow, because of the jamming, he couldn't hear it. But he had a cousin that lived outside of Moscow that would record it off the air on open reel tape, get the tape delivered to his house in Moscow. He would listen at home and then get ideas what he would do on his own show.
But that's the way that they used to listen also, mm-hmm. as many people found out when, based on information that we had given them, that they would go out to the dacha. They would go outside the city, and they would record it. And then they would make copies of it and give it to other people. They had an entire samizdat. Can you imagine people typing painstakingly Solzhenitsyn's novels and his works on a typewriter at all hours of the night just for this whole samizdat thing? And then they would go from one to the other, hand to the other. I mean, that's nothing that we have within our comprehension. Mm. We have nothing in our comprehension that the saxophone would have been banned by the Communist Party as a decadent instrument of the American bourgeoisie. Mm. What the hell does that mean? Excuse me, what the heck does that mean? But we here in America, don't, when you talk about it, it's like we were talking about the last trip that we made to Venus or Mars. But they were on our planet. And he did touch them, and it was almost like I've seen it described as a religious experience, and that he was a preacher, and that they listened to him and as an icon.
I know the day. I know the night. I know the skyline in early light. The empty streets before the dawn. The playgrounds. When the kids are gone, the harbor bell, I know them well. What does it mean? How much is real? Things I see, or the things I feel. Perhaps the world is what it seems. Believe your eyes. Forget the dreams. But where's the town I've always known? It looks familiar. A world where I belong. It wasn't right. It wasn't wrong. But it was real. And she was here. And now she's gone. She's gone. She's gone.
You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. The U.S. has a number of private shortwave stations. For the most part, those stations are religious. And their main message is that if we are not good girls and boys, we are going to hell. But one religious station is different, the Alaska-based KNLS. While they are a Christian station, they take a more secular approach, producing features on a wide range of subjects. Back in March, Keith met up with Paul Ladd from KNLS and sat down with him to talk about this very different approach to Christian radio.
Calling. Thanks for making your new life station a part of your Monday. Broadcasting from the top of the world, this is KNLS, Anchor Point, Alaska, USA. I'm Lucy Grant, your host for this.
Well, KNLS is an international shortwave station. We do an hour programming. We do a one-hour program each day in English, another one in Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and Russian. We do magazine format. And we broadcast the good news, Christian message to the world.
Now, a moment ago you were saying to me it's quite different from the other Christian broadcasters out there.
It is, and they have what works for them, we have what works for us, and, you know, doesn't mean anybody's better or worse, it just means we're different. And what we do is our programming is 1 hour. And about a third of it is devotional teaching type segments. These are religious in nature, of course. You're not going to hear any denominational or sectarian agenda. Then we have about a third pop music, because we have found that people in other countries like American pop music. Now, obviously, some songs you're not going to hear on our station because they're talking about things that are, shall we say, naughty or have some naughty words in them. Of course, we're not going to air that. The other third of our programming is feature-type segments, similar to National Public Radio for listeners in America.
But that would be focusing on Christian topics, correct?
Yes and no. We do sometimes. For instance, we've had interviews with Dr. Gary Chapman, who's a family counselor and author. We've had him on. We've also had Senator Joseph Lieberman on, talking about his book, The Gift of Rest. It's about the Sabbath, so I guess that is a faith-based segment. But we've interviewed a lot of interesting authors. We've talked about body language. We've talked about why people are fascinated with celebrities. We've done movie segments, interviewed musical artists. The last third of our programming is what we would call news feature type segment, similar to what you'd hear on National Public Radio if you were listening in the United States. We will have authors on. We'll have artists. We do stories about culture, you know, visual art, musical artists, anybody we can get to sit down with us. And when I am putting together a segment, the first thing I think about, Keith, is would I want to listen to this stuff? And if I don't want to listen to it, I figure other people are going to find it more. I try to make it interesting. You know, I do my part. I just hope the audience likes it.
Now, you said you broadcast over shortwave. I mean, we've seen so many cuts happen in shortwave. The BBC, Radio Netherlands, the VOA cut back on frequencies dramatically, some of them even going off air, like Radio Sweden, recently Radio Bulgaria. Why is this station still focused on shortwave so much?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because a lot of the people we're trying to reach are people who live in remote areas. The stations, their local media is controlled by the government, so they're not even allowed to hear some of the stuff that we would be doing. But if they've got a shortwave radio, they can pick us up. Shortwave radio can cross geographical boundaries that a lot of other stations simply cannot. And we're committed to it because we want to reach people. We have a good message, we have good news, and we want to get it to good people. And that is the way we figure to do it. We are very committed. Our president, Charles Caudill, recently spoke to the HFCC, and he pointed out that we're not interested in, you know, promoting a government point of view. We're interested in reaching people with this message, and we still think this is the best way to do it.
And I think one of the advantages, and I heard somebody say this, they said, well, if you're going to be leaving shortwave, that's better for us. Less interference for us. Thank you, guys.
That's what that was a quote from Charles in his article, I believe, was published in Radio World later.
欢迎您收听生命之光广播电台。生命之光是世界各地的一群基督徒组成的。电台在美国阿拉斯加州的安克角，电台的总部和录音室在美国田纳西州的法兰克林市。我们很高兴天天为您制作节目，也希望您在听完节目之后来信告诉我们您的感想。现在就请您欣赏这个小时的华语节目。
There have been songs written about almost every subject under the sun. You name it, it has probably been written. If not, then it's just a matter of time before another subject is added to the list. And when the Ham Band came out with a CD of songs about amateur radio, that is just what Andrew Huddleston and his wife Lisa Ladefoga did. The musicians who played on the CD are a veritable who's who of studio players. It was recorded in Nashville and has songs about almost every aspect of the hobby.
That our station is second to none. They hear us, oh yeah, here and there, everywhere. And isn't ham radio fun?
Hotel Alpha, Mexico, Bravo, Alpha, November, Delta.
Ham Band.
But if truth be told,
well, I would say hello. Not clutching to the antenna. I wasn't afraid of falling off. We have safety harnesses on there. What people really observe is the fact that Lisa is also on the tower, which is quite astonishingly amazing because she's afraid of heights, which I'm not. But we were up there singing the song, and it was a lot of fun.
So let's get to this. I mean, how did you come up with this idea to record some songs about ham radio? This is very unusual, I have to say.
Well, I can tell you that normally when you write songs about things you think other people will understand. So a lot of people have written songs about love, and a lot of people have written songs about all sorts of things that they think other people will be interested in hearing about. Now, I happen to know there are several million radio amateurs in the world, so I thought, well, why not write some songs that only they will understand? And that's what we did. And it's been a lot of fun, and a lot of people who spend the time to actually listen to the words, they realize that that it's a fun hobby, and it's, you know, it's a little bit like shortwave listening, except it's a little bit more two-way. So it's mm-hmm. it's a great thing. So that's why we did it.
So what was your inspiration for the songs on the CD? Were you looking up at the antenna and went, oh, I have an idea, and just started writing it down?
I have to say that radio hams have got a very bad press, but in my opinion, justifiably. A lot of these people are really boring people. And that is a problem. But I say that one or two or three out of every 10 or 15 or 20 you talk to become lifelong friends. Mm-hmm. And they want to talk about everything under the sun. And you meet people from the strangest places doing the strangest kind of jobs. One of my favorites is a chap up in the north of England who works in a timber yard. He just drives a forklift truck, and he has a ham radio station in the truck, and he works from 9 to 5 every day and talks to people all over the world at the same time as he's driving the forklift truck. Now, that is strange, and that is different. And these stories, I've just collected the stories and written songs that fit. You know, it's a little bit of a country type sound, but it's not because country is and the radio hams. You know, there's no real connection between the two, but it's the kind of romantic stuff as well. You know, the one of Lisa's songs is called "The Radio Widow," and it's just the fact that a lot of people who are radio hams tend to use a lot of time on the radio. And so we've even written songs that cover the marriage, the problem with the amount of time it takes, and it's a lot of fun. You can hear all the men laughing, and you know, I don't know what the women say about it. We don't get that much feedback from them, unfortunately.
So when you recorded the album, what I found that was amazing, I mean, you both live in Denmark, but yet you recorded it in Nashville, Tennessee. Why is that?
Well, it is a dream for us. It's a very long story, but the end, you know, the absolute serious reason for it is that if you can work with the best musicians in the world, and even named musicians, the people on this album, the Ham Band CD, include Pig Robbins, who played with Elvis, and then Kenny Buttrey, the drummer, who played on most of the Neil Young hits that you've heard of. And these are legends. You know, the guitar player who didn't die in the Buddy Holly air crash, He plays the bass on this album. It's absolutely an astonishing collection of legends, and you know, they're just doing a job, and it just they play a lot better than we do. Let's put it that way. So we would, and you know, Nashville is a nice little town and friendly people, and it's just the best way to make music, in our opinion.
So after you wrote the songs, you contracted the musicians in Nashville, Tennessee. What was the reaction from the musicians saying, "Oh, we're working on a session for songs about ham radio"? Was there any reaction at all?
The strangest thing about Nashville is there is one thing they do not like. They do not like you to be unsure of yourself. So when you walk into the studio and you say, "This is what I want," they're happy, and they don't question it. They just play, and it's great. But if you come along and say, "Well, I'm not quite sure about that," then you get into hot water. But actually, they didn't comment the subject matter at all, but just the very, very strange chords. I am a very strange songwriter, so a lot of the chords are very unexpected, and this gave them a lot of the fun, I can tell you. Go.
After you did the CD and it was released, what was the reaction, not just from the ham operators, but also the general public?
It was a very interesting thing. You know, you have to know that Lisa and I were fairly well-established singers, songwriters, performers in Denmark. We've played all over the world, but we were quite established in Denmark. And, of course, this album was reviewed by the local newspapers, by the national newspapers in Denmark. Mm-hmm. And one comment, which I think covers it quite nicely, was that one person, I sing a song where I say, "I'm not going to climb up the tower anymore, because I have a 100-foot-high tower, which I have to climb up, I still do,
And it's I don't really want to do it. It's not that it's dangerous. It's just that it's, you know, 100 feet is a long way up. I get tired. And this reviewer, he just said, why should I be interested in the fact that Andrew doesn't want to climb the tower anymore? And I'm thinking, you know, if I said, oh, baby, I miss you so, you know, why would anybody want to hear about that more than I don't want to climb up the tower anymore? Maybe you can answer that, Keith.
I'm not really sure. Andrew, how long have you been a ham? And Lisa, are you also, I wanted to ask you, are you a ham operator yourself?
No, not at all. I'm the radio widow.
The radio widow.
I'm the radio widow. The wife that lets my husband go off into his little shack in the country and have a good time. And okay. I might be different from a lot of the other ham radio guys' wives because I actually enjoy it when Andrew goes out to play with his mates.
Okay, so I was going to ask you the question, I was going to ask you the question and say, pretend that Andrew is not there, just between you and me. Do you ever get upset going, look, oh, we have to clean the drains, we have to do this. What is he up to now? Get away from the radio. Do you ever do that?
No, because I do all that work down here at the house anyway. So so no, that's not a problem. I clean the drains and I do it all. And Andrew looks after the radio. Mm-hmm. So that's a fair share of the work, isn't it, Andrew?
Absolutely. And, yeah. And it's absolutely true because I've got the most fantastic collection of tools and equipment and machines out at the radio shack, which is a little bit outside of our town. And at home, we've got nothing at all. So Lisa has to do everything with her bare hands.
But I'm a Viking. So it's all right.
You wake up every morning, you go to work, then home again, that old routine. Turn on your TV, although they never show a single thing you haven't seen. Checking out the internet's no fun no more, it's all just ads and spam. You're looking for adventure. Well, you could become a ham.
If you want more information on the Ham Band and where to get the CD, Seeking You, go to www.hambandalloneword.com. Again, that's www.hambandalloneword.com. Now time for propagation. Here's Dan Hensley with a look at what we can expect over the next 7 days.
Here's propagation for the week from June 30th to July 6th, 2012. On June 30th and July 1st, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 90. On July 2nd, a 10.7-centimeter flux starts to rise every day by 10 points, except for July 6th. On July 2nd, it becomes 100. On July 3rd, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 110. July 4th, 120. July 5th, 130. And July 6th, 135. The A index will be 18 on June 30th, and then from July 1st to July 3rd, we see an A index of 15. On July 4th and 5th, an A index of 8. On July 6th, an A index of 5. The KP index will be 5 on June 30th, and then for the next 3 days, that's July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, we'll see a KP index of 4. On July 4th and 5th, we'll see a KP index of 3. On July 6th, a KP index of 2. Sunspots 1512 and 1513 are in view this week, as sunspot 1512 poses a growing threat for M-class solar flares. With the high A index most of this week, coupled with solar wind from a coronal hole on the Earth-facing side of the Sun, we get unpredictable propagation. The wind from this coronal hole should reach us here on Earth from July 1st to July 2nd, 2012.
Thanks, Dan. Well, that's all we have time for. If you'd like a QSL, please write to us at our snail mail address, PCJ Radio, care of Media Network Plus, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Sanmin Road, that's Sanmin Road, Section 1, New Taipei City, 22070, Taiwan. Again, the address is PCJ Radio, care of Media Network Plus, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Sanmin Road, Section 1, New Taipei City, 22070, Taiwan. And our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, MNP, standing for Media Network Plus, mnp@pcjmedia.com. And with that, we've come to the end of our monthly edition of Media Network Plus for June 2012. On behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, this is Paulette McQuarrie saying so long and see you soon.
Come and join us on the airwaves. Surf the skies and find new friends. Let the world unfurl before you. You'll be the one who sets the trends. 'Cause you're not like those poor old wage slaves. Change your life and start anew. Come and join us on the airwaves. You'll feel free and you'll be happy too. To friendly folk from far off lands of which you've never even heard. Pick up local knowledge about all those world events that just occurred. Turn your hand to contesting. Adrenaline starts coursing through your veins. Drink the finest of champagnes. Come and join us on the airwaves. Surf the skies and find new friends. Let the world unfurl before you. You'll be the one who sets the trends. 'Cause you're not like those poor old wage slaves. Change your life and start anew. Come and join us on the airwaves. You'll feel free and you'll be happy too. Come and join us on the airwaves. The skies and find new friends. Let the world unfurl before you. You'll be the one who sets the trends. 'Cause you're not like those poor old wage slaves. Change your life and start anew. Come and join us on the airwaves. You'll feel free and you'll be happy too. Come and join us on the airwaves. You'll feel free and you'll be happy too.
CQ, CQ, CQ. Hello, CQ, CQ, CQ.